Пуст, а не подойдут ко мне. Do you understand what I just said? Unless you speak Russian, you would never be able to understand the words, let the little children come to me. Jesus wants to speak to all children in every land, and your church's Sunday school can help. For just $5 per book, your students can adopt an LHF mission project that will provide Bible storybooks to waiting children in other lands. Learn more at lhfmissions.org/children.
Listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Erin is appropriately dressed for this episode in yellow because it's an iron ladle challenge and I'm so excited for this.
Yes.
What are we doing, Erin?
Ladies, I don't know how we got this far without ever doing this before, but we are doing corn.
Yes!
Corn.
All of my notes for this episode are just all caps, corn!
Yes. I had this on the agenda since I think last year in the summer. I was like, next year in the summer in corn season, we got to do corn. So
here we are.
It is a new world food. It's one that we can claim as Americans. This is, any American, North or South, can claim corn. Anyway, but yes, we love the corn and we love it in all its forms. Now, in preparation for this, it is a little last minute lackadaisical preparation, but still, it was some preparation for this. And I did some corn polling in the lounge to find out what people's opinions are on some key methods of corn on the cob. Now, we are not going to give you a recipe for corn on the cob. That's too personal.
That's the reason.
We don't want it canceled by declaring that one method of preparing corn on the cob is the only right and true one.
Yeah. So I offered a few options, but I decided with this poll that I should allow for other people to offer options on the best way to cook corn on the cob. And I started with the ones that just came to my mind. So I went with boil in salt water for 3 to 5 minutes. Originally, I was going to be like, the time is part of it. And then I was like, that's stupid. That's too complicated. You can't offer that many options. So 3 to 5 minutes, I put out one option. Boil in sugar water for 3 to 5 minutes. Grill in the husk, grill wrapped in foil, and microwave because you are a heretic. Those are the choices that I offered to the ladies of the lounge. Now,
these were so good.
Yes. The definite winner in the poll, even among all the additional options, there are like 20 options or something. I don't know. There's a lot of options that were thrown out there. The winner is grill in the husk.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I would not have guessed that.
That's the one that got the most votes. Huh. So indeed, people like the grill. We love to grill, right?
Well, that's true.
I mean, in summer when it's corn season, it's also grill season.
That's true.
So grill in the husk.
I wonder if maybe all the boiling people got divided up. Salt water, 3 to 5 minute team. You had the sugar water, 3 to 5 minute team. You had the water, 3 to 5 minute.
Yes. That's
plain water. Then you had boiled for like 8 to 10 minutes.
Right.
And
right.
You start dividing that whole team up into little sub.
It's true.
We're guaranteed the win.
Mm-hmm.
During the election night.
Right. No, you're right. You're definitely right. And there were a lot of boiling variations. Mm-hmm. There was even a variation of boil and grill. So you start by boiling and then you grill it. There is a very interesting one. Cook it in the oven at 425 in the husks for 30 minutes and then pop it into a cooler, which apparently will keep it hot for a long time. So I guess if you're trying to prepare corn for a crowd, that is a method to do this. We even had one person who offered the best way to cook corn on the cob was raw. So she just she just eats it right off the cob. Now,
good company with one of my things that it is that good sweet corn, you are just spoiling it if you cook it at all. If it needs it's not good enough. If you just
get it out of the I had a third poll that I was prepared, but I didn't prepare it early enough, and so I didn't get to launch it. But the third poll was going to be, does corn need to be cooked?
Oh.
And I figured that was going to cause a lot of strong feelings, which is why I was going to poll on it.
Well, yeah. But create the drama.
Indeed, I personally do like raw corn, but I'm not sure that I care for it like all raw straight. Like, so I often will take good fresh sweet corn and cut it off the cob and then mix it into like a salad or a bean, like marinated beans or salsa or something. Like I add it to something else and not something else that's going to be cooked, something else that'll be eaten cold. And I will definitely do that. But eating it all raw, I was asking some of the people that I eat lunch with their opinions. And one of them thought that it had sort of a chalky taste / texture when it's raw. And part of me thinks she's not wrong. But Rachel, maybe it's just I haven't had the best sweet corn. If it's really the best, there isn't that chalky, starchy taste.
Yeah, the only time I've had it and understood the appeal of raw sweet corn is when it had been picked like 10 minutes before.
Okay.
Straight out of
the
way. Gotcha. It's really good. But so I understand that. I still like it hot. So
yeah, exactly.
And if you eat it, you can't put butter on it. Uh-huh. You can, but it's kind of weird.
Yeah. So that did indeed become the next poll, and that was the butter poll.
Yes.
The corn, the best way to butter corn on the cob.
That got intense.
It did. For this one, there were a few clever ones. Some I liked. I hadn't thought of before. So I offered out first option. One of those, what is the name of this? It's like it's a gold colored plastic corn butterer. It's like a contraption. It's hinged at one end. It almost looks like a garlic press, only the hinge is at the end of the handles instead of at the press part. And you like mash the butter in it and then it squirts it out the end and you roll it along. Sarah's looking at me. She has not ever seen one of these corn butterers in her life, apparently, or I've done a terrible.
Is that the one that turns the butter into like basically lip balm for corn?
Yeah, I would say it does. Often it has like on the other end, the part that's like pushing the butter through has also like a flip top compartment that holds salt. So that you can butter and then you flip it over and you can immediately salt your corn. I've seen that type. I feel like we often have that and we never put salt in it because it just spills everywhere.
But I have never seen this in my life.
It's a corn butterer.
A gadget specifically for this purpose.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, and maybe it's no longer a thing
like this?
Yeah, that's it. She found a picture of it.
It's a Tupperware.
No doubt, Tupperware, and then Pampered Chef, they all, but that does not surprise me that Tupperware did it because I had an aunt who was big in Tupperware, and that probably explains why I think everyone in our family had a corn butterer.
You can get your own on eBay for $9.99.
Exactly. Anyway, one of those, and if they're always gold, I don't know why, but they're always gold color, probably because of the butter to make you know what it is, and it's for corn. Yeah,
they're all gold on the internet.
Yeah,
that's so funny. I've never seen that.
Part of corn culture I've never been part of.
Corn culture.
There's a sticker. We need a sticker for this episode.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Corn culture. All right.
So another way to butter the corn, and this I think is what unseated the corn butterer from pride of place on the tables in our family anyway, is to spin the cob on top of a stick of butter. And you have to do it like you shouldn't be just a weirdo and do it where the butter and the corn are making a cross with each other. And so you're just carving out a big old divot in the middle of a thing of butter. You do it long side of the butter to the long side of the corn and then spin it along there.
Yeah.
And it's perfect. You do have to devote a stick to only corn.
But in corn season.
Yeah. That's the downside of it. But
is that really a downside?
Otherwise, people are complaining about getting corn silk in their toast. Having lived this reality, it's possible to keep all the silk out of the butter.
That's true.
Yeah. You gotta have
it is still the most efficient.
Wonderful.
Well, maybe not the most efficient, but it is the easiest way to do it. Now, that one, I think, actually got the most votes for the best way to butter corn. I also offered out there, you know, use your table manners and use a knife. And some people had variations on that. They felt the tines of a fork had the ideal curvature to match the cob of corn. Mm. And yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I suggested you could dip it in a vat of butter. And I did specify... I did. I said only the corn and not you. And then I also said, get a hot tub, you weirdo. That did get a few votes, but I think it was mainly for the humor. But I also kind of think that might be like more of like a county fair approach to corn on the cob.
Yeah.
Like if you're doing corn in volume, then dipping it into a vat of melted butter becomes that is the most efficient way, but it's not a real practical way at a table with kids to have a vat of melted butter.
I added an answer to your poll. I usually don't do that, but I felt unrepresented. Yeah. And that is only work if you keep your butter on the counter so it's nice and soft.
Mm. Okay.
And that is to use a basting brush. And that way you can get the butter in all the little nooks and crannies of the corn.
Right.
And I like that way a lot.
That's a great way. I agree. Another popular answer was similar to the butter stick approach. You take a stick of butter with one side still wrapped, and then with the unwrapped side, rub it along the corn. So in this case, I guess you're holding the butter and not the corn. Actually, this isn't quite what I imagined it was. This to me, as I'm reading this, with one side still wrapped, do you think it's unwrapping like 4 tablespoons of the stick and leaving 4 tablespoons exposed?
Oh, like unwrapping the short way?
Right. Yep. Or
It works also when you're putting butter on top of just about anything. However much you think you're going to need, tear off that much paper and then use the rest of it to hold on to.
So that would help with the corn silk problem also, mm-hmm. because at least you're sacrificing less later when you need to do the cleanup. You just trim off the short
little
bit and you're good to go again.
That's true.
One only works with refrigerated butter, because if your butter is soft and you try to hold on to it, then it's a nightmare.
Yeah,
that's too squishy.
You're right. Ooh. You're right. That's true, also one of the key things with corn. Like, you need to be able to, whatever method you use, it needs to be fast.
Yeah.
Because corn is best hot, as Rachel pointed out. And you need to be able to have the butter melt on the corn. Otherwise, it doesn't get in the crevices properly. Yeah. And then you just
have what's the point?
Of butter.
Yeah.
No. So you need something that allows a group to butter quickly so you can just have the rotation going of the butter moving around the table, followed by the salt and the pepper, mm-hmm. and then everybody eating and disposing of the corn bones. So,
Corn bones? Is that what?
It's corn bones. Yeah. That's the, I feel like that's the proper term. I don't know. That's what my family calls them, corn bones.
I've never heard it before, but I love it.
The cob is the whole thing. Once you've eaten.
You eat corn on the cob, you take the husk off, you eat the corn, and you have the cob.
It's corn left. Bones.
People from Nebraska are going to be really mad at you.
It's corn bones. Yeah, I don't know. That's what you do with it. So
does that mean that a watermelon rind is a watermelon bone with an exoskeleton?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. Yes. Watermelon, the shellfish of the land. So let's see. There was one other interesting corn buttering approach that I thought Mary Lynn Warren Horde had. She said her frugal mom used the heel from the loaf of bread, and she would put a good plop of soft butter on the bread, wrap the bread around the corn, and apply. Easy and somewhat less messy for children to do on their own. She had 6 children, so she was kind of a
expert
on that.
Yeah.
Messiness.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And Christy Houston pointed out that the best way may not be the most polite way. So that's also true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and many people eating corn on the cob is its own. I didn't even try and tackle that, but already in the first with how to cook it, somebody was like, my favorite way to cook corn on the cob is to cut it off the cob. And I'm like,
That defeats the whole purpose of eating it off the cob.
It is a messy business, and it gets stuck in your teeth. So it's only worth the effort at peak corn season, but at peak corn season, it is worth the effort.
It is worth it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
We closed the polls. I just mentioned, in that first poll, you had put the microwave option. Did anyone actually vote for that?
Oh, yeah. Many people. And many people voted for it. And there were variations, like they offered several ways of cooking it. So some people pointed out that a microwave is nice if you only need to cook a single cob of corn instead of boiling up a whole pot of water for a single cob. I get it. And so, like, somebody put in a Serious Eats article, which I do love Serious Eats with their scientific approach to cooking. And they endorse the microwave as a legitimate way.
Oh.
But I just don't think it is.
Feels a little wrong, but
I know
it serves a purpose.
No judgment. Yeah. And corn, delicious.
Yeah. So indeed, some people did indeed do it. And there was some discussion on boiling in sugar water, Sarah, because you had asked about this. You were like, what? Boiling sugar water? And I was sure that I had heard about this and that, like, this was a way.
It's definitely a thing.
And a number of people commented that back in the day, corn, it wasn't as sweet as it is nowadays. Like, we've selected for sweet corn through the years
because we're Americans.
Because we love it. And it's, I mean, it is delicious.
It is really good.
So the corn has gotten sweeter over time. And yet if you grew up with, this is our family's way of cooking corn, is to put it in with sugar water and some people add a splash of milk, like, that's the way you do it. So even though the corn has gotten sweeter and maybe it doesn't need the sugar water.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's still the way that some people cook it because it's leftover. It's your heritage. Yeah. It's your corn heritage.
It's the corn culture.
And actually, that's good to know because a lot of the heirloom varieties that are available if you're a home gardener just aren't quite as sweet as some of the modern hybrids. And so if you switch to heirloom seeds and are feeling like your corn is not as sweet as you want it, that's a great hack.
Try cooking it in some sugar water and see if that perks it up a little. Yeah. Yeah.
So with this iron ladle challenge this week, we've got the topic of corn. I sort of eliminated corn on the cob as something that any of us could offer because, again, that's too personal a thing. We don't want to cover that. We allowed the crowd to speak on that one. But tell me about the recipe that you have to offer, that you have to share for corn, because it's corn season. Everyone's in the mood for it. What do we have?
So I asked Luther, full disclosure, I can no longer eat corn, which is just kind of sad for me. Mm. But I have fond memories. I asked Luther, because normally my go-to for these is to just ask him what he likes and do that, because it's normally something that we used to eat.
Sure.
So I asked him what his favorite corn recipe was, and he's like, I don't know. Like, oh, well.
Yeah, he's usually pretty opinionated.
He is.
Yeah.
He's always opinionated.
Which is great. He's probably going to be thinking about it. And, you know, 2 days from now, he'll have a whole list for you.
Probably. He does love a good corn on the cob. However, so there is a salad that I kind of pepped you. Mm. There is a salad that we used to make that involves corn.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to call it the cowboy salad back when I could eat regular food. It's based around this Trader Joe's cowboy caviar salsa. Mm,
oh yeah, that's a good. I've had many a variation on that, and it's delicious.
So this one is corn, black beans, and pepper salsa. And I looked on the Trader Joe's website, and I need to read you the story of this because it's really funny. So from the Trader Joe's website, it says that the legend has it that the cowboy caviar concept was originally developed around 1930 for an, quote, all Texas menu at a high-end department store.
Oh.
The head chef was mandated to include black-eyed peas on the menu, and since she personally loathed the legumes, to make them palatable, she pickled them with onions, creating a salad-esque salsa, the cowboy caviar, that has become a cult classic. Strap on your spurs, Trader Joe's cowboy caviar is now in your town. Since we love cult classics, especially of the crazy creative culinary concoction class. I love Trader Joe's. And we've had good success with our other less than ordinary salsas, which is true. We used to eat all of them. We decided to create our very own Trader Joe's cowboy caviar instead of black eyed peas. However, our caviar of choice is black beans that are mixed together with corn, onions, and red bell peppers, pickled in a blend of chipotle peppers, adobo sauce, and lime juice. This crunchy, savory salsa sensation carries Southwestern character. Man, these writers. Southwestern character and enough heat to take note. Yes, it is definitely a cult classic. So we would just mix that with like lettuce, taco spice, beef, and shredded cheese, and we would have cowboy salad. But that isn't my real recipe. I just had to tell that story.
Okay.
Because I claimed cornbread.
Yes.
Because cornbread is my absolute favorite way to eat corn of any variety. And I learned in the tiny amount of research that I managed to do before this episode that apparently I like a brand of cornbread that will make all of the cornbread purists angry. And I didn't even know that there were differences in cornbread until I started looking up how I like cornbread and what that actually means about me, like some personality test or something. Okay. So my favorite way to eat cornbread is sweet jalapeno cornbread, which is apparently a mixture of a lot of things. And I also like to make it in a cast iron skillet. So I'm mixing northern and southern varieties of cornbread and cornbread procedures. And I did not know this until about an hour ago.
Okay.
So this was my snack of choice when Lucky's was a thing in St. Louis. Like I would get their sweet jalapeno cornbread. I don't know if they made it in a cast iron skillet, but that's definitely the best way to make it. We used to eat Jiffy cornbread mix when I was a kid. But my personal favorite is the from scratch Betty Crocker recipe, mostly because my husband's like very much Betty Crocker is the only cookbook kind of person. So everything that we made for most of our marriage has been
Betty Crocker approved.
Betty Crocker approved, like the original in a binder. Can't find some of these recipes. Kind of Betty
I'm
Crocker.
Not
yes.
surprised of you eating Jiffy mix as a kid, because where is it made?
Michigan!
Michigan!
Everything Jiffy Mix.
It was everywhere. Yeah. It was, yep. Yeah. Oh, the Jiffy Mix biscuits. Those were actually really good. I love those.
They really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, so definitely cast iron cornbread fan, but apparently this is the Southern way to make it. And I don't know if I picked that up with Luther, but I thought, because he's from the South, I thought that we used to also make it in a cast iron skillet as a kid, though. But if that's a Southern tradition, my family is not Southern. So
might be more widespread there, but it's not like
true.
You know,
I don't know.
But you're right. One of my grandmas was from the South. Her cornbread was very salty, no sweet.
Yes.
And it came out of a skillet. And then my other grandma from the North, her cornbread was basically cake and it came out of a cake pan.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that is the difference, the separation.
Yep.
And I apparently mash all of that together and make everyone
savory and sweet. I love it.
Yeah. I don't know. My dad's mom was from St. Louis, though, so it's possible that just kind of seeped into our family culture and we ended up with cast iron. I don't really know. And I didn't ask, but I just thought it was really funny that I tried to find my brand of cornbread and it doesn't, it's everybody, it's all mixed together.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So I'm just a conglomeration. So the Betty Crocker recipe is just super easy. And we can always share a link in the show notes. I don't know that I need to give you a recipe for cornbread. It's pretty standard: buttermilk, egg, cornmeal, gold medal all-purpose flour, sugar, baking powder, and salt. And you mix it and you bake it. The Betty Crocker website recipe does have a lot of fun variations, though.
Mm-hmm.
So jalapeno is an option. Making it sweet is an option. They have like Southwest option. There's all kinds of different things. You can make it as muffins.
Sure.
But it's a like staple of my childhood and in the Jiffy recipe. But yeah, we used to make it a lot too.
You back ever in the day. Had my backup recipe for this was corn casserole, which is basically cornbread with corn.
Yes, I love a corn casserole.
And so like when I make it, and my family doesn't eat it, so I don't make it very often, I just dump a can of drained sweet corn in a pan and then cover it up with Jiffy Mix made according to the box, and I bake it and it's so good.
Yeah, it is.
Easiest potluck recipe.
I think I've had it at potlucks.
Yeah. I have some friends that make a variation on that. I think theirs is softer, so it is more of like the, I don't know, there's just a softer consistency. It's not like cornbread, but they call it corn gumption.
Ooh. Oh,
I like
interesting.
And yeah.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Corn casserole is great. What did you make,
yeah,
Rachel?
So I opted to go with soup, specifically powder. Now, that's not a soup that I would normally make in August or July or during sweet corn season. Because when there is sweet corn to be had, I want to eat it on the cob.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
But this is the recipe that you can use when the Advent soup supper comes around. And maybe you're one of those lucky people who has some of that sweet corn in your freezer and you want to use it as the star of your soup. You can also make this recipe the way I did it today, and that is with, depending on the size of the pot, one or two cans of creamed corn. I like the creamed corn better than the whole kernel corn for this. And this works well with your freezer corn too, because when people cut it off the cob, rarely do you get the entire kernel. It's usually like half to two thirds of the kernel.
Yeah.
So it is closer to that creamed corn consistency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of different ways to make corn chowder. But the way I've made it for several years is as follows. So I start with about half a diced green pepper and, depending on the size of the onion, about half an onion diced. And I saute those real well in a generous dollop of butter. We're thinking like at least 2 tablespoons of butter. And while they are sauteing and simmering on the stove, I'm slicing up potatoes. So today I did about four medium-ish potatoes, diced them up, shoved them in the pot, dumped in my 2 cans of corn, some people would use like chicken stock for this or broth, but I'm cheap and old school. And so I just rinsed out the cans of creamed corn and added 2 bouillon cubes.
Uh-huh.
It works.
It does.
So So, and then salt and pepper to taste, and bring to a low boil, and then let simmer until the potatoes are soft. Now, at this phase, I would ordinarily have liked to thicken it with some butter and flour melted together.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I am currently staying with my father-in-law. Well, that is very fortunate. I'm very happy that I'm currently staying with him. But he is a widower, and his kitchen has not a whole lot of from scratch cooking. There is a goodly amount of canned chili, but that was not immediately relevant.
Yeah.
I did find one very old mason jar with whole wheat flour in it, but I suspect that was put there by my mother-in-law, who's now with the Lord, and it was a little past its prime. So I was unable unable to thicken the chowder, but thankfully both the corn and the potatoes have a good deal of starch in it. So it wasn't
Exactly.
So I just took the potato masher and mashed some of the potatoes a bit to take some of the starch out. And then I always end by adding about 2 cups of whole milk and bringing it up to a simmer again. I might, when I rewarm this, I might add a handful of shredded cheese, because that sounds like it would go really well in this.
It does.
But I love this recipe. I love the way the sweetness of the corn and the savoriness of the potatoes, and then the aromatic quality of the onions and green peppers. Like, I love green peppers in just about anything, but especially this. The contrast here is really, really nice. And I think some people might like to make this with, I know a lot of people make chicken and corn chowder, which would also be really good to add some shredded chicken. I usually don't. For me, this is a vegetarian soup. But when you're wanting to, either in Advent, Lent, or whenever, when you're wanting to remember the flavor of that summer sweet corn, this is a great recipe. It just warms you. Warms you through. So that's what I made. I had a bowl before we started recording, and I'll probably have another bowl after we're finished recording, because aside from the copious amount of butter, it's a really healthy, simple soup.
Yeah.
It sounds so good. No,
it does. I love a good corn chowder. One thing I thought about, Rachel, while you were describing this with if you're cutting corn off a cob, if you are actually going to do that, maybe the corn that you're able to get, you're like, this isn't, because you do the thing where you're like, or at least I do this, where you like poke a kernel with your finger to see how sweet it is. And you're like, it's not as sweet. It's like it's not peak corn, but you still want it. If you cut the corn off the cob, do you do the second pass with the back of the knife to scrape off like the rest of the corn?
I usually try to, yeah.
Yeah. So that gives you even more corny goodness to add. But I have also heard, I don't think I've done it, but I want your opinion. So if you were going to do this with maybe somewhat less peak corn, I have heard you can then put the corn bones in the soup to add even more corniness to the chowder, and then fish them out. Like, it's only to add their flavor, like stock.
Yeah.
It's like making corn bone. Stock. Exactly. It's like a ham bone, only it's a corn bone.
Exactly.
Exactly.
This would only work if you were making it like super fresh in the summer with your peak summer corn, because presumably by the time you're making this in November with corn in the freeze, those corn bones are dead and buried.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
They're in the bottom of the compost heap. But I think that is a very intriguing idea. The idea of boiling the cob to get more of the corny essence out of it.
Yeah.
Essence. So many phrases I never knew existed until this episode.
My recipe, serve it up with some crusty bread, and it's a really, really nice. I'm tempted to just mute my microphone and go get another bowl right now. But I will instead ask you, Erin, what did you make for this?
Yeah. So I chose to highlight. So growing up, my family had a recipe that was called confetti corn salad.
Ooh.
And my mom made this regularly for potlucks and summer things. Anyway, she made it. I did not like this recipe growing up. I did not like it because it featured three things that I really disliked as a child, but I've grown into it now. And now I love this recipe. So I am going to share this recipe, confetti corn salad. It features corn, as you would expect.
Yes.
Also, a small green pepper, Rachel, so you'll be pleased.
Yum.
Chopped up, two green onions sliced. Green onions. That was an iffy ingredient for me. It's not quite as sharp as a full-on onion, but it's still oniony.
Yeah.
Green peppers, though. Oh, I hated them as a child so much. Raw. Honestly, green peppers I hated in all forms as a child. There was a bitterness to them that I did not care for. Not even a little.
Yeah.
It also has two stalks of celery. That was neutral. And it has a large tomato. I also hated raw tomatoes as a child.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I did too.
Oh, I hated them. I just... So this was a real, I did not like this salad. And my mom, like I said, it was a family recipe. We would have this a lot. It might be a Betty Crocker recipe. Who knows? Oh. We called it confetti corn salad. And I have a handwritten copy of it. But it could be that it came originally from Betty Crocker. In this case, I already had the handwritten copy in my possession. So I didn't have to go to my mom and say, was this a Betty Crocker recipe?
As we all know and love. Recipes are always public domain.
Yes.
Very copyright for recipes.
Indeed. So this one, the original calls for two cans of corn because you can make it any year, any time of year. But if you have good corn on the cob, you could easily, if you have it good, get yourself an extra, I don't know, three or four cobs. And once you have had them the night before, then take those extra four and cut off the corn from it, or else use two cans of corn drained, not cream of corn. This one you want just the straight corn. You mix all of the vegetables together. It's super simple. And then the dressing is 3 tablespoons of mayonnaise with 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, and then just add salt and pepper to taste as you need it. That's it. The tomato adds its own juice to the dressing.
Yeah.
It is simple. It is delicious. I love this salad now as an adult. For those who have kids, I don't know, your mileage may vary. Some kids enjoy those sort of vegetables. I did not enjoy them. But I will encourage you who are sad about your kids being picky eaters that sometimes they grow out of it, like me. I was never especially picky, but I did grow out of my dislike of these things. So, yeah.
That's really good. It would be great for people who have always been tempted to like eat chunky salsa with a spoon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
If you're that sort of person and want an excuse, with the mayonnaise would add some nice creaminess to it, I bet.
It does. Yeah. It does.
Oh, yeah. I want to try this now. I'll be looking at the recipe in the show notes.
Indeed. Check them out. It is easy. It comes together so quickly. And it's great for like a summer picnic or, you know, well, not a picnic where you're probably sitting on like a blanket. But if you have a plate, if you've got maybe not a summer paper plate picnic, that's a little dicier too with a liquidy sort of thing. But if you have a plastic plate, then you're good. You're good. It's great. Definitely have brought this to the annual Labor Day picnic that my family does. So
could we get by with like 3 or 4 paper plates stacked?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Just, you know, that's always the question with a paper plate is, will it hold up to whatever things you're putting on it? That's a risk you have to gauge. There are many variations on corn salad. Like I've tried other variation. I do like the mayonnaise one. This one is like the classic one from my childhood.
but there are many variations on corn salad that use more of like a lime juice and maybe olive oil, more of that type of vinaigrette instead of mayo with lemon juice. Go lime juice with olive oil.
Interesting.
And then you could take it in the direction of, say, a Mexican flavor. And so maybe you put some serrano peppers in there instead of green pepper and add some cilantro. You could still stick with onion and tomato, and it would be a totally different salad.
With almost the same ingredients.
How versatile.
Same proportions and all of that. I saw a recipe for Indian, like India flavored corn salad that called for, again, lime juice, but then included some like Indian spices, like garam masala, that spice blend. Sounded amazing. So, again, it's one of those that almost becomes like a template where you could you can play with it by swapping out ingredients and get different experiences with the corn salad. But I do love this classic confetti corn salad.
Sounds good. I like it too.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
So if you ladies who are listening have a favorite corn recipe, we'd love to have it because everyone loves corn. Well, most people love corn. But anyway, share your corn recipes. We want to embrace our corn culture and this culture alive. So share those recipes so that we can foster this for generations to come. Who knows how sweet the corn will be in another 50 years?
Who can imagine?
Oh boy. I feel like your family has a corn culture or just a corny culture like my family does.
Exactly.
This is our world. It's our time.
Yes, it is. Well, ladies, share those corn recipes with us in the comments for this episode in our Lutheran Ladies Lounge Facebook group. Join us there for all of our episodes and a whole lot of other conversation. And those polls are still in the Facebook group as well. If you have opinions and didn't share them yet, you can go do that on those polls. You can also find us on Instagram at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. We'll be sharing some corny posts in the next week or so. LOL, so funny. We'll be doing that on our Instagram page at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. Join us there as well. You can sign up for our e-newsletter in the show notes for this episode, or you can send us an email, lutheranladies@kfuo.org, and we'll get you signed up for that. You can find all of our episodes at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge, or on your favorite podcasting app, or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at kfuo.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org.